My name is Jerry Hamza. George and I wound up partners and best friends for almost 35 years. I was in the country music business. I had never seen George Carlin, heard of him. Everybody else had. My dad had started as a big band promoter. When it got in the mid-60s, I was working with my father full-time. Finally, one day, he came to me and he says, "Listen, I have a partner that we do country music shows with in Toledo." And he did a comedian and sold out the Masonic Auditorium and the Taft Theater in Cincinnati. He says, "I can get Rochester and Syracuse on this guy if you want to do it." I agreed to do George, and we did 4 shows in 2 days. And that is how I came to meet George Carlin. I remember this first thing I ever said to him. I said, "The Syracuse Herald Journal would like to interview you." And he says, "Why, is it my birthday?" And I said, "What's that?" I didn't know how to respond to that. We hit it off. I wound up being his manager. Something that maybe you should know about George. George started in the business with a guy named Jack Burns. That was his partner. So it was Burns and Carlin. He was a disaster chaser, and he turned George into a disaster chaser, too. In other words, if they heard that there was going to be a monsoon someplace, Jack, for sure, you know, would be on a plane in half an hour to fly right into the thing so that he could enjoy it. You know, so these guys had a little different head. A new album. I kind of like it when a lot of people die. This is something that George came up to me a half a dozen times, I think, feeling me out, you know, because it's such a radical title. And, you know, saying, you know, when you read that like 50,000 people died in, you know, India or something, and then it's so disappointing, you know, that it wasn't Reno. You know, he wanted it. He wanted it as close as he could get it. We had an HBO show coming up, I believe, in November. And we had a title, "I Kind of Like It When a Lot of People Die." And he had the major piece, which was The Closer. I had heard it probably, I don't know, 60 times. And we thought it was going to be cool. HBO had done a great cover, which was wild, and it was very, very different, and we were all set. George had a condo in Las Vegas, and I think we were doing about 12 weeks a year there, and that's where he was on 9/11. I'm at home, and I got a call from my son, Alexander, and he said, "Did you see what's going on?" And I says, "No, I have no idea." So I turn it on, and we're watching those very famous pictures of the planes hitting the Twin Towers. I called George, and he's already on it. We didn't know what we were going to do. We assumed that the shows were going to be canceled. About 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we got a call from upstairs saying there's absolutely no shows. And now, if he's not going to do a show at 9 o'clock that night, he wants to get in the car and scoot back to L.A. You remember that movie where Al Pacino was driving blind? Well, let me tell you, as a passenger, you felt that way when George was driving. Nobody could ever make it from Vegas to West L.A. in less time than George did. So George changed the title. He was great at titles. And he changed it to Complaints and Grievances. And he filed it, and he says, "We'll use it someday." It never got used, and it's getting used now. Logan Heftel, who I'm talking to, went through so much of George's material. It's great stuff. It's Class A stuff. This was his closer to his HBO show right about the time he was at the prime of his career. So this is stuff that we're really proud of. George, I think, would be very happy not to see these pieces wasted, to see people get to hear him. I think he'd be thrilled. I know he was proud of them. He was going to put them on home box office, So I think he'd be very, very happy. And I think the people that listen to this are going to be very, very happy too. I learned a lot from him. I learned a lot about comedy from him. One of the things I learned is that you can't go in and keep an audience up all the time. It's got to have a flow to it. It's got to go up and down, up and down. And if you left them up all the time, you could never sustain it. George had a vulnerability. If somebody was heckling, he'd tell them to go fuck their mother. And the next time he played the show, the same guy would be in the audience. Because of the vulnerability he had, they just would say, oh, that's George. Because it was George, he could do a piece like, I kind of like it when a lot of people die. He could do that. They would accept that from him. And you got to remember, that was one part of a huge body of work. He found a pattern that worked for him. But if you go back and you listen to George's shows or look at George's shows, generally, he'd hit you between the eyes with a one or two strong one-liners. And then he would get you a couple of lighter ones. And then he would do a little philosophical piece. There was something he wanted to say beyond comedy. Then he would go back and he would do some more light stuff. And then he would close with the heavy one. You know, I know in my heart that there's nobody that can replace him in my life. So that's sort of a mixed blessing, isn't it? When I started with George, I was just amazed at how strong his mind was. He could start in the morning at 7 in the morning, and he would just work the whole goddamn day. He could work creatively on building new material morning, noon, and night. I used to kid him. People used to say, is George around? I'd say he's up in the trees because he didn't want to be around. He wanted to go away and work on his stuff. You know, we were on top, period. Sirius XM, they had their 23 million listeners vote on the best comedians of all time, and George came in first. He's still first. So we must have been doing something right. It seems like it has a life of its own now. It seems that the man has been gone 8 years almost, and it keeps going. Isn't that amazing?